Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapley Graylian, again along with Tom Luongo. Yes, he is back. This week, Tom and I thought we didn't have a lot to talk about. It turns out that we did. Martin Brodeur ties Patrick Waugh for the all-time win record, and yes, he's going to pass it. The GMs are thinking about fighting, and we're thinking about it too. And, of course, we have to take a look at the standings. It's the winners, the losers, and the ugly on the rink. Martin Brodeur finally tied up Patrick Waugh with the all-time wins, most career wins, 551 wins for Martin Brodeur the other night in Montreal. I don't know if you – did you see any of the highlights of that, Tom?
Yeah, I did. I saw a couple of them.
I thought the funniest part was when they zoomed in on Patrick Waugh, and you knew that they were going to. And Patrick Waugh is just kind of giving a little bit of a bored golf clap, cowering in the corner kind of thing.
And apparently he's rumored to be one of the guys in the running for the head coaching job in Montreal. I find that really actually all sorts of ironic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wonder what's going to happen. Is he going to lose a game pretty poorly and then say he'd never coach another game there? I mean, you can't pull a coach necessarily.
I want to be traded to some other team now.
I want to coach to another team. And that's the thing with I don't want to get off too much on away from Brodeur, but for a moment, Patrick Waugh, it was a great goalie. It was an incredible goalie. But you have to separate that from the person and the personality. Some players are really good players and they're just not good people, and that's just the way it is. Those expectations that we have for a player to be well beyond, to act, behave the way that they play sometimes is a little unrealistic.
Well, in the case of Patrick Waugh, he does behave the way he played. <He's> legendary for how he would protect his crease. So, and get away with it.
But he played well, and he doesn't always act well. That's what I'm saying.
He played with a high degree of skill, but not the highest degree of class.
Yeah. Now the debate, of course, is on whether or not, who's the greatest goalie of the two. Who's the better goalie? And mind you, I am a Colorado Avalanche fan, but what I keep going back to is not – some people go back to the system that Martin Brodeur plays in. Mm-hmm. What I keep going back to is the innovation, is that goalies were playing the butterfly style to a point before, right, Patrick Waugh. I mean, probably the most famous before Waugh was Tony Esposito. Mm-hmm. But Waugh really kind of innovated and perfected the style, much more so than any other butterfly style goalie. And you don't see very many people mimicking Martin Brodeur. I mean, he's a unique goalie. Don't get me wrong; he's a very good goalie. He's a great goalie. But if you were to look at numbers, I think that Martin Brodeur is going to come out ahead, because of where he plays, because of the style of system he plays in, because of the amount of games he plays in. But I wouldn't consider Martin Brodeur an innovator at all.
No, and I don't. But Dominic Hasek was an innovator in that sense as well. But I'm not sure that that's necessary. That's a necessary criteria for whether or not he's the greatest goaltender or one. I think honestly, I think it's really a false argument. If you want to know it, if you know what I mean, it's really like a false dichotomy in a sense. It's one of these arguments that's designed to bring out people's opinions and passions, but try and back up their opinion with fact, pseudo fact, or numbers, or something like that. Like, you don't back up an opinion to win an argument. You can't argue an opinion. You can only just state your opinion and then hope somebody agrees with you or doesn't agree with you, and you can have a discussion about it. But that's pretty much all it is to me. I think they're both phenomenal athletes who at various times were at the top of their profession, and in the case of Brodeur, still at the top of this profession.
Oh, absolutely.
And we should just feel privileged of being able to see both of them play, is the way I look at it.
Yeah.
Brodeur is, he's for all of the talk about the system that and the number of Hall of Fame defensemen that played in front of him and everything else, at the end of the day, rarely, if ever, do you see Marty Brodeur not make the save his team needs him to make when they need him to make it.
That is true.
And that is the measure of a great goaltender. Yeah. And everything else is a matter. And you could say the same thing about Wah. I mean, 99% of the time, Wah was there to make the save that needed to be made. Mm-hmm. And that's the mark of a great goaltender as opposed to a good one.
Right.
Or a very good one.
Yeah, so. It's always that. And unfortunately, you know, a goaltender always makes that last save, or, you know, that last miss eventually.
Right.
And
it
seems like that's what they're remembered for.
It's at the end of the day, you measure wins in, mm-hmm. in a goaltender, because at the end of the day, that's what he's paid to do, win games. Not stop 92% of his shots, not stop, no more than two a game or whatever. It's to win the game.
Right.
And if you have a team in front of you that's only capable of scoring two goals a night, then you got to let in one mm-hmm. if you want to win. And both those guys were capable of doing that and playing – and have been capable of doing that on, you know, pretty much any basis. And if they didn't have their A game, they'd still fight through it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that's being said about Roberto Luongo right now. It's the same kind of thing. Even when he doesn't have his A game, he's still battling to win the game. And that's the mark of that's the mark of a great goaltender.
Yeah, I think the jury's going to be still out a little bit on Luongo only. I mean, he's a good goaltender. Again, don't get me wrong. He's got winning ways right now. We've also seen the flip side of that from him, and you know, occasionally when his streak goes down, and it tends to plummet pretty good.
Well, what I mean is that, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he's so far been as consistent as consistent as those other two. It's the idea that at the end of the day, he is never going to stop trying to win the game, regardless of whether he's got his A game or not. And he, even when he's not, doesn't have his A game, he still winds up making saves that, you know, he shouldn't make.
Well, I think that's one of the things I've noticed quite a bit about, you know, in hockey and in sports in general, is that really what separates skilled player from a great skilled player, you know, somebody who you could put two guys next to each other who have the same level of skills. And the one who is going to win is not only just the one who never quits, but the one who does all of the things that he doesn't necessarily have to do. The shot isn't necessarily going to get through, but you still have to attempt to make the save. The puck may slide by you by mere inches, but you still have to make the reach to get it and things like that. And even those things that, 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100 aren't going to make a difference in a game, in a play or whatnot. Truly great players and even and nowadays just plain professional players because the skill level has gone up, the training level has gone up,
right,
do those things consistently. They do it all the time because they can, it's what they have to do, it's what they're supposed to do, and that's what makes them what they are, I guess.
And more importantly, to add to that, and it's been said many times in the past, that the great players have a sense of the game itself, mm-hmm. and their sense of timing. And Brodeur has been almost otherworldly in my experience of having that great save in him that breaks the back of an opponent that's coming hard,
mm-hmm.
that's desperate to score a goal, and he just refuses to give one up. And that kind of competitiveness, I think, is really overlooked in this game. People, it's easy for them to talk about, the routine saves he makes every night, the easy 17 shutouts, and those kind of things. That's not important. Even in those 17 save shutouts, there's three or four of them that are momentum turners. They're game breakers. And he's been doing it for so long now that, we come to take it for granted. And, and he's a nice guy. So it's, mm-hmm. It's easy to just kind of overlook it. But I'm not arguing one way or the other over Wah or Brodeur. In my mind...
Oh, I am.
I'm not a little bit. No, that's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't or people shouldn't. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, for me, I just feel it's a privilege to watch that kind of thing happen. It's a privilege to watch Steve Yzerman play, at the end of the day. And any number of other people, and we're going to say the same thing about Ovechkin and Crosby, and 10 years from now, and we should.
Wow, it's almost like somebody gave you the teddy bear. Or you are, you know, it's the kinder, what? Gentler Tom Walker.
No, I've always felt this way about these. Now, talk to me about Michael Jordan and the fangs come out.
We're not going to talk to you about Michael Jordan tonight.
So, but, you know, talk about Gretzky or any of the other, you know, the other guys. You know, those guys are just, you know, at that level, mm-hmm. to argue between those two guys, to me, just seems, I don't know, it seems academic. It's fun, but it's really not important. They're both brilliant.
Well, I'm going to turn the tables on you now. The Penguins of Carolina are on fire.
Yeah, I know.
And you're not happy.
No, I'm not happy about it. Chris Kunitz got a friggin' hat trick the other night. I think in the 6-4 win over Boston, yeah, the Pens are undefeated in their last 10. And they needed to be if they wanted to be in a position to win. I'm hoping that they begin to regress to the mean, but it looks to me like, you know, they didn't have any jam on the wings all season, and that's what they were missing. And then they pick up Guerin and Kunitz, and I think it was Kunitz was really the big change for them. A guy who would actually go in the corners and dig pucks out, as opposed to Miroslav Chetan, who was, you know, looking to, you know, be one with the fans in the stands, as opposed to ever getting his, you know, nose dirty. So.
Which he is now, well, in Wilkes-Barre.
And he is. And, you know.
Yeah. I still don't think that they're going to catch up to the Capitals, even though the Caps are, you know, they're playing 500 hockey, basically. Tonight they played Atlanta and lost, what was it, 4-1, 5-1, 5-1.
I think it was 5-1.
5-1. And Ovechkin held off the score sheet. I want to read the quote from Ovechkin the other night. I won't lie. I wanted to score the 50th goal at home, but apparently God wants me to score it in the game against Atlanta. Now, you know, all I'm going to say about that is, you know, you can't, you just can't say stuff like that against a team that has nothing to lose.
And nothing to lose. And it's like they've won like 6 of their last 7 or something like that. And it's amazing what happens. You and I were talking about this before we started recording. It's amazing what happens when they had a team with a good coach who knows he's going to be there next year, mm-hmm. finally can turn to them and go, okay, so who wants a job?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everybody's skating. And they put on a good show the other night against Buffalo, comma, damn it. And yeah, Atlanta's beating everybody right now. So where were you guys 3 months ago?
Yeah, no kidding. Or hey, how about New York Islanders? Where were they 6-2-2?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
In the last 10. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, is it you were saying about the Penguins, about the pickup of Kunitz, which is, you know, was a good, you know, good solid pickup. Is Guerin kind of turning out into the heat that he was promised at the deadline a little bit? I mean, all I'm hearing is that he actually is playing well with Crosby, which was something that was a concern before.
I mean, Crosby is going to make everybody around him better. Generally speaking, he does. If he's settled with really bad players, he can only make them average.
Right, but I mean, if you with considering the skill that, you know, was on that team previously, and the complaint has always been since Crosby's in there that they need somebody to get the puck to him. You know, he needs people to play with, and it keeps seeming to me that it's not a matter of the level of quality of player, that it started to seem like personality issues, you know, or just compatibility. So which then drives me to question, okay, are we looking at somebody who does make everybody around him better, or is he a really skilled, talented player that doesn't necessarily do that yet, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question, and I'm not sure I can really answer it at this point. I think I'm more of the opinion that, you know, when you're saddled with a guy, when you're saddled with a career floater like Chetan on your right wing, mm-hmm. And you need to score ugly goals in order to make it to the playoffs, and you're not, if people aren't willing to, and he's not, a guy like Chetan's not willing to go there, then there's nothing, you know, Crosby can do about that.
Right.
When you've got when you've got that kind of situation, it's death. Mm-hmm. It really is death to a player of that skill and that level of competitiveness when you've got somebody who doesn't match with him at all. And I think it was from the beginning. I said it was a bad pickup by Ray Shiro, and you know, to his credit, he's done everything he could to make amends for it. Guerin's got 8 points in six games and is a plus eight.
Yeah.
Or no, so he's a plus one, sorry. And it's, you know, two goals, six assists, 8 points, and he's playing 18 minutes a night, and he looks at and he's probably ecstatic.
Yeah.
To go and play with a guy like Crosby.
Yeah. So, and to be away from the Islanders.
where are you going to be at the end of, you know, where do you want to be at the end of your career? Do you want to, you know, I'm sure at some point he signed with the Islanders because it was the only people who were going to pay him a reasonable amount of money to go, and you know, you do what you have to do.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, can I say that I'm a little pissed off at the Phoenix Coyotes right now? They are tanking right now, and they have now taken away last place from the Colorado Avalanche. Yeah, that was solidly the Colorado Avalanche's. That is not fair.
Well,
not pleased,
you know,
with this.
It is a lottery, James.
So, it is. So, I know. It is weighted lottery, though, is it not?
Okay. So I mean, put down the gun and step away from the ledge. It's okay.
The Coyotes are horrible right now. I mean, the Avalanche are horrible right now. But and I won't do it all sing-songy. You made fun of me for that last time I did. But all right, I'll do it. Horrible. The Coyotes are just awful right now. 2-7-1. They lost their last five. The Sellers are truly, you know, are now solidly the Sellers. They sold the farm. But even, you know, the Avalanche only gave up one guy, really, and they they're tanking. Take a look at the Ducks, you know, they're solidly in 12th. The Kings,
yeah.
You know.
Time is running out at this point. But, you know, it's a lottery pick. You know, as long as Atlanta keeps winning, you guys are in good shape for the lottery.
Yeah.
I mean, Ottawa's only 2 points out of the lottery at this point.
It's hard to believe that they're even out of the lottery. Remember, a couple of weeks ago we were talking, and the worst five teams in the East were still worse than the worst team in the West. And now take a look. You know,
and Colorado and Phoenix are doing everything imaginable to reach the bottom. You know, it's a race to the bottom, kind of like, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Competitive devaluation of currencies across the world right now. Same
competitive
thing.
The race devaluation of currencies. You just had to slip in that.
Had to slip it in there. Couldn't help it. It is.
There isn't any economic news, so you had to slip something.
That's always economic news. There's the G20, but we'll save that for another.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the.
But speaking of economics, NHL and the GMs finally admitted that, yeah, there's going to be a big effect on the NHL's business model real soon now.
They didn't have the opportunity to deny it anymore, considering every GM at the trade deadline pretty much said the same thing. We're not concerned about next year's, you know, salary cap. We're worried about the year after that. And then, everybody was saying it.
But I'm going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Salary cap may not move, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams spending to the cap next year. Your usual suspects will. But I'd be very surprised if more than a handful of teams actually spend directly to the cap next year. And a lot of guys who are making money this year are not going to have jobs next year. They're going to be replaced by draft picks and AHLers, you know, and prospects. It's just going to happen.
Every team's going to have the same model as the New York Rangers. So a few haves and a whole bunch of have-nots.
I don't think every team is going to be that way. I think it is going to be that way, at least for the next couple of years, while these current round of contracts play themselves out. And then we'll see what happens. I still think there will always be teams like the Rangers who are going to do it that way because they have the money to do it that way. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of teams are going to be in the position of not being able to do anything else because of the way they've, you know, set themselves up. Because what looked like brilliant ideas and brilliantly backloaded contracts for 8 years and 12 years and all this stuff, now, all of those great ideas vanish in a puff of CDOs, SIVs, and mortgage bailouts.
What a difference a day makes, because it wasn't that long ago that even we were saying, you know, well, the backloaded contract is, you know, is kind of what they're doing, and it's not a bad idea. But now they're backloading them, but they're giving them so much money that it's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
Now the issue is that, you know, it's one thing to backload a contract; it's another thing to still say, I still have 6 years to pay on this contract.
Right.
And if it's a, you know, a backloaded 3 or 4 year deal, well, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But a backloaded 8 year deal, you know.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's or 10 or 12 or.
Or 15.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The you did say the GMs had, you know, talking, and the GMs had their meeting. The big eye was on fighting and staged fights. The puck drops, the gloves drop, and they go. And the idea that came out was a 10-minute misconduct added on to the 5 for fighting for those types of fights, puck drop and all that. Yeah.
Ready? Rob Ray, when they were discussing this on the Buffalo's coverage the other night, whether it was Saturday night or earlier in the week, said, dumbest thing I've ever heard, because the fighters, they're only getting 3 shifts a game anyway, and they go in for 5. What's another 10?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to play. They're not going to play in the 10 minutes after that fight anyway. After they get out of the box anyway. Matter of fact, as what Rob said was quite explicit. Was quite right. Which is, look at this season of this time of the game. Is Andrew Peters ever going to see the ice between now and the end of the season for Buffalo? No. He's suiting up for 20 games a year, maybe 25, getting 4 to 7 minutes a night in those games. Though the quote-unquote professional fighter has been, for the most part, taken away from the game by the way the game is being played and the way the game is being called.
Mm-hmm.
And the staged, quote-unquote staged fighting, they only give them an extra 10 minutes. They usually need 15 minutes to recover from those fights anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, those guys, you know, kill themselves when they're doing that stuff. So I see it as window dressing on an issue that, you know, I see it as just window dressing, ultimately.
Well, it is, but I mean, it is pretty. I mean, even George LaRocque came out and said, you know, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You know, and you know, he said nobody's going to want to fight now because of the implications of an extra 10 in the box and not being able to be there for your team. And you know, maybe for a player like George LaRocque that does have an upside aside right. from being, you know, from being a fighter. Yeah, you know, I could see that, but you know, I'm with you on the lip service thing. It's just, you know, they're trying to rid the game of fighting, in a way is kind of silly. It's almost like ridding boxing of fighting. You know, it's part of the game. It's part of the sport, and I understand that the current quote unquote culture isn't as enamored with fighting, you know, as. You know, hell, in the last 4 years, ever since, you know, since the violence on ice kind of has escalated in some, you know, in very public fashions.
Which culture? Because hockey culture.
Oh, the mainstream. No, I'm talking about the mainstream culture. I'm talking about exactly what they're talking about. You know, the things that make it onto ESPN SportsCenter. You know, they'll obviously. We could talk about it all day about the and about the like, for instance, Bertuzzi was all over ESPN. And that's the only thing, you know, the brawl in Buffalo, you know, Buffalo versus Ottawa, you know, several years ago, or stick swinging incident and whatnot. I mean, they really are placating to what the new fans that they want, but you know,
well,
it is a joke.
But the real question is, and I don't think it's that. I think they're placating the corporate sponsors.
Mm.
And I think the corporate sponsors over the course of the next 3 to 5 years are all going to be out of business.
Yeah.
And I think it's a gate. And this is something that I was thinking about the other day. And I was talking to one of the guys I work with who's a good hockey fan and, you know, and actually a good guy for being a Philly fan. And I said, you know, I was thinking about it and it just popped into my head. I said, you know, if all these corporate sponsors like – all the banks and all of the other major corporate sponsors other than the beer guys and the car guys. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they're not going to be around. And it's going to be more of a gate-driven sport, and it's going to be a much more revenue-generated gate-driven sport. And therefore, the NHL is going to put out the product that is going to generate them the most revenue with the people that they have. And I think we'll see a return to – more, I wouldn't say old-time hockey, but I wouldn't see a lot of this kind of going by the wayside over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. I think that the NHL at this point may be scared of losing their corporate sponsors and react by trying to placate them, but I don't think you can ever placate somebody who's not fundamentally happy with what your product is in the first place.
Yeah, no,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're in or you're out, and right now there's going to be plenty of people, you know, they're going to be struggling to find the sponsors. If for all the – you know, look at places like Nashville that were struggling with sponsorship or getting it back, you know, and now all of a sudden they're in a situation where you're not going to have it as easily.
You may not have it as easily.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's I understand, you know, that they get scared, that the NHL gets scared. I can understand sure. that. But at the same time, you know, changing the product to suit the sponsors is not going to get you long-term hockey fans. That's just not going to happen.
No, I think they changed the product on the ice in terms of, quote-unquote, how they call the game and the rules in order to open the game up to effectively discourage this kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. I think that was an excellent way of making an end run around the issue itself and at the same time improve the game itself.
Yeah, well, yeah, so, that was what I was going to say. It wasn't developed just to do that. It was absolutely a byproduct of all
sure.
of the things
yeah,
that
no,
they did. But I mean, really what they did was they changed the rules to make the to address an issue that the fans had more
right.
than anything. It was the lack cool. of scoring, the stifling play, the boredom of, you know, games that you know, why would people tune into the beginning of the season and watch what they were doing? So, yeah.
Exactly. And then so the unintended consequence of that is that you wind up de-emphasizing fighting anyway as a function of the way the game is now being played and
yeah.
called. And I think that's the better way of going about it. Make a better game first and then deal with the fallout thereof.
Yeah.
You know, and every once in a while you're going to get aberrations like the Anaheim Ducks in 2007 that were an extremely skilled team and an extremely mean team.
Yeah.
And, you know, that worked for them once.
Yep.
It doesn't work year in and year out. I mean, we're talking about that, and Detroit just garnered their 100th point for the 9th straight season.
Yeah, and without fighting pretty much. So.
Doing it without having to do any of that stuff, but play hard.
Yep. And was it the Ken Hitchcock said that, you know, they worked harder than they were skilled, and they're a very skilled team. So
exactly.
And he was saying that you know, that if that's the team that they're going to be, then they're just going to beat everybody. And it's just,
yeah.
And Detroit and San Jose, the first two teams to be locked into the playoffs, 100 and 101 points. Yeah. So that's impressive. Where I can't believe we're actually getting to that point in the season.
Yeah, I woke up this morning and realized it was the 16th of March and went, oh, my God, it's nearly done.
Yeah.
Looking at teams, we've played 70 games now.
Is it hard to believe? It seems
yeah,
like
it's
gone
crazy.
So fast. I wish that you and I were slightly more organized than we were, because I think it would be fun to do a bomb game of the week. But, you know, that just means we'd have to pay attention to stuff. Toronto versus the Flames this week. Toronto beats the Flames 8-6. The funniest part to me is that Olli Jokinen got a hat trick. He still lost 8-6.
Actually, this is a game we were talking about before we went on. This is a game that you and I should have watched, because it's like two teams we each – it's you hate the Flames and I hate the Leafs, because, you know, we
exactly.
each root for a team that plays against three Canadian teams. We're both like, you know,
doesn't
I just had
old?
It with Canadian teams. And – yeah,
you know, I'm sure it makes it life a lot easier on the Canadian teams, and probably also for the gate revenue, because people get to see their Canadian teams, and, you know, Canadian fans like Canadian teams. That's, you know, understandable, but, you know, boy, I'm sick of it. You know, I still don't understand the whole, you know, the Pacific Division and why Vancouver isn't in the Pacific and Detroit, then Dallas isn't either in the.
I don't get it. I don't either. I don't understand why it's got to be that way. I mean, they could just – if they want to put six games apiece, you know, against each of the three Canadian teams in the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference, they could just use the two extra games that they have in the schedule and just make it that way.
Yeah.
Put Vancouver where it belongs. I mean, you know, if they really want to do that. But, you know, they could spare, you know, Avs fans and Buffalo and –
well, I would think that, you know, it would only be better for San Jose. You know, I would think
right.
I think that would be an instant rivalry right there. That you know, and you know, frankly, Dallas versus Colorado, except for, you know, the past year or two, used to be the number two rivalry pretty much for the
right.
Avalanche. I mean, obviously behind the Red Wings, but that's kind of gone by the wayside somewhat. Not to me.
Not that Claude Lemieux plays for San Jose.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't even looked at their roster lately and see if he's still playing. I wonder. What do you think? Is he still going to be playing in the? Think he'll play in the playoffs?
Oh, I'm most assuredly. they'll dress if they need to. I expect Todd McCullough obviously put his best 20 guys on the ice, but I would be very surprised if Lemieux doesn't suit up a few times.
Yeah, I think he should. We talked about it before, but, you know, God bless him, man, for coming back. And he said he was going to make the comeback, and sure enough, he did. And when I saw him in San Jose, and I think he kind of jacked up his hand a little bit in a fight. But he's out there, and he's being passionate. He's being the Claude Lemieux that he has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to complain about that.
Nope, not at all.
What's on your hockey schedule this week, Tom? What are you watching?
Well, I think it's pretty much a make or break week for the Sabres. They get to play Ottawa, who they can't beat. Mm-hmm. Saw something today that the Sabres are 20-20 against the bottom five teams in the East. Wonder why they're not in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I think that was the same thing that Earl Sleek was pretty much saying to me about the Ducks, and that they just kept losing to the bottom of the league, and that was and where are the Ducks now?
Good. Well, it's the truth. But after Ottawa tomorrow night, they've got to play a back to back on Friday and Saturday against Philly and the Rangers.
Ooh.
And Miller skated today on his own, apparently, and things are progressing well. I sincerely doubt we'll see him before next week, though.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to see Coburn either. Are we still awaiting suspension news on him?
I don't know. What happened there?
He cross-checked a player in the back of the head, was sent off, 5-minute major, and it was pretty deliberate. So it was kind of ugly, actually. Check your local listings for YouTube footage. So you may not see Coburn in that game for.
Oh well,
yeah.
Like the versus commercial he did.
Yeah, you'll still see his commercial ad nauseum.
Yeah, I'll still see the commercial ad nauseum ad infinitum, but I might not have to see him, you know, rushing the puck up the ice and playing pretty solidly. Yeah, that'd be okay with me.
Yeah.
I'll take whatever I can get at this point.
You know what? I don't even know what my schedule of Avalanche games consists of, considering how far out of it that they are. That, you know, and the other night I tried to watch a little bit on. Actually, they play Minnesota tomorrow night. I tried to watch some of the game against Vancouver, and after the first period, and you know, seemed like I'd turn away to do something and Vancouver would score. And I'd come back, yell at the computer a little bit, turn away, do something, Vancouver would score. So I decided, you know what? Maybe it's just me. Maybe the problem is me. I'm shutting it off.
Yep. I did that the other night when Sabres went in 1-1, tied being a third period against Philly, and gave up two goals in the first 2 minutes. And I went, well, this game's over. And I just shut it off. I said, I'm not going to watch the rest of it. And they gave up two more. So I'm glad I didn't.
There's a little section, by the way, on NHL.com right now called Verdure Watch. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. He's got – newsflash, he's going to break the record, and Patrick Waugh is going to say something really tasteless.
Probably. You know what? I think I need to buy you a 2009 St. Patrick's Day Buffalo Sabres shirt. What do you think? Would you wear that?
Would I wear that?
Yeah. Yeah?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Have you seen the St. Patrick's Day gear?
No, I haven't. Actually.
It's pretty much virtually everything is exactly the same except that, you know, it has a different logo. So I'm actually looking at the green Sabres knit cap with the Sabres Buffalo slug on it.
I won't wear a toque.
You won't wear a toque?
Dude, I live in Florida. I'm not wearing a toque.
Come on, you could turn up the air conditioning and drive down the road in your Sabres green toque, and everybody would look at you and watch you and stare
and laugh
and watch laugh. And just watch the carnage in your rearview window as everybody crashes from staring at you. Well, Tom, thank you very much, and good luck in your hockey watching this week.
Appreciate it, James. You'd be good.
Thanks. That does it this week for episode number 25 of The Rink. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out about how to subscribe to us on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook or even follow us on Twitter, which of course is at twitter.com/rinkpodcast. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can always call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. Tell us what you thought about this week's episode or just hockey in general. We would love to hear from you. Thanks a lot again for listening to The Rink.